Hello and welcome to the Game of Thrones After Show for Season 8, Episode 2, The Rightful Queen. Tonight we'll be discussing Jaime's evolution, Dany's birthright, and the Army of the Living. Stay tuned.
You're tuned in to AfterBuzz TV, the ESPN of TV talk. Now, let the buzz begin.
Hey guys, we are so happy to be back to be discussing episode 2 with you on Game of Thrones.
Welcome back.
We missed you guys.
Oh, we missed you too. We're back.
Of course, I'm your host, Kristen Elizabeth Snyder. Ryan Mallady and I were Game of Thrones HBO Xfinity experts on the Watchathon. If you didn't see it, you can go to either of our Instagrams and watch the link. But also joining us tonight, we have Jeremy Dan. He held George R.R. Martin prisoner, captive, at a Comic-Con party, asking him so many predictions and questions and theories, he couldn't let him go.
He could not get away from me.
We literally had to interrupt him from staring at a map right to do this podcast right this moment. So
we're tracking
he's here
the
with
geography.
Us.
We gotta know the miles, the distance, the battles. We gotta know it all.
Classic Jeremy. Classic.
And he's also a professor at USC. So thanks for being with us, Jeremy. And then we have Anna K. Thomas. She's an entertainment reporter who knows what these characters are doing in and off the show. And she's a diehard romantic, so Game of Thrones is like her daytime television soap opera.
It really is. I love those plots, you guys. I can't help it.
And there was some romance today.
Tonight was all about romance. I know we're going to get into it, but I loved it.
Yeah, me too. And Ryan has seen every episode of the show 4 times, and he's not a golden lion. He's a golden Ryan Mallady.
And she ain't lying.
I can't.
Nice to be back, guys. Nice to be back. We've been doing this show for years together, and
yes.
I'm so looking forward to, you know, having our new panelists. You guys are great. I'm looking forward to it, guys. If you're tuning in on YouTube, please give us a thumbs up. If you like our show, if you love Game of Thrones, comment about what you see. If you agree, disagree with some of our stuff. If you're on iTunes, please give us a 5-star rating if you can. We're also on Spotify and now on Apple TV Podcasts.
Yes.
So please check that out. And thanks again for being fans.
Yes. And can we just say, guys, happy Easter.
Yes.
And happy
Passover.
Yes.
So we really appreciate you guys being here all the time, but especially on a day like today. Thanks for hanging out with us, being our watch along, being our live chat, and we're celebrating. So thank you guys for being here.
Maybe people watched with their families.
Yeah, I hope so.
For Easter. That would be interesting.
Today. It's a family show. For just a few more minutes before we make Ryan take off his
hair. I don't know about
that. Make me.
Okay, so guys, just to get you in the know of what our plan is. So first we're going to talk about Jaime's evolution. You know, the character we've seen him start from to who he is now. Mm-hmm. And then we're going to talk about Dany's birthright. The name of this episode is The Rightful Queen, but I think there should be a question mark at the end of that. Question mark, The Rightful Queen. I think it's a question. And then our third topic tonight is going to be the Army of the Living. We felt like this episode really celebrated life, gave us really human moments. They all think, you know, they might not make it through this war. So it was sort of everything that you wanted characters to say to each other. We got in this sort of segment, we're calling it Army of the Living because they're versed the Army of the Dead. So mm-hmm. we'll be talking about that. And then lastly, we'll be talking about Bran's plan,
Ooh.
That military strategy.
Strategy.
Instead of tragedy. And then we got some news and gossip. Good. And one thing I wanted to tease for our prediction section. Last week, Ryan and I, when we were filming the HBO Xfinity Watchathon, we were asked to give our predictions and theories. Now, HBO cut out a portion of our predictions and theories at different moments, and we really think that that's because we might be on point with those. So we'll bring those up in the predictions section, so make sure you stay tuned.
I can't wait.
We haven't even told them, actually.
Yeah,
yes.
That's all a surprise.
So our first topic that I want to get into is Jaime's evolution. So we have seen Jaime, and this was Jeremy Dan's quote, he was the golden lion to now the golden hand.
Mm.
We've seen him, that guy. He even says to Tyrion earlier in the episode, you know, I'm not that golden lion anymore. I'll never be again. And everything that we've seen him go through, we've seen him be a changed man. And you know what? I think he got to Winterfell and he was reminded, we're not in King's Landing anymore. Because he's immediately on trial.
Yes.
And this went a little bit better than Peter Baelish's trial,
yes.
I would say.
Oh,
yes.
Littlefinger.
A lot better. I mean, he actually had someone to speak up for him. I mean, obviously Tyrion wasn't going to be allowed to speak, but Jon stood up for him. I mean, not him in particular, but just any living person. Anyone who could breathe.
Yeah, John's like any living person I want on this team.
Anyone who's here to help is allowed to help. You know, just to touch on his evolution from... I noticed a quote that he said was, Brand re-quoted it, was the things we do for love. Mm-hmm. And that took him aback because it reminded us from the very beginning of what kind of person Jamie was. Mm-hmm. He was the kind of person who would do anything for his family, whether or not it was morally right. Now, he comes into this situation, I think, kind of standing on the shoulders of his oath, saying, I swore an oath to help to protect the North, so that's what I'm going to do. Mm-hmm. But I really don't think he even believes that. I don't think he really respects oaths. And remember when he was in the hot tub with Brienne? Oh, there's so many oaths and things you swear up and down. You got to protect people, but then you got to listen to your king. Like, what are you supposed to do if they conflict? So I think that he's evolved into a person that now just tries to do the right thing. And I think that swearing the oath to defend the North was the first oath that he's sworn in a long time that he truly believed in.
Well, it was an oath for the living, right? Mm-hmm. So that is at its base, you know, getting to our Army of the Living section that we're going to talk about later. That is the ultimate kind of oath you can do. I think what he's decided is he's not going to be a part of the oaths to this Lord and that Lord, but the most pure oath you can make is this kind of oath that he is still keeping.
Right. He mentions how, you know, it's beyond families. Actually, Brienne does as well. They're kind of on the same page. It's beyond all that. It's purely survival. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that's something that this show kind of brings, especially how you guys are mentioning the humanity of this episode. Love and survival are these powerful themes that bring people together. But there's really nothing else that's, I think, more powerful or more primitive in nature, in human nature, nothing more important than the idea of love and the reality of survival. And we'll get into, you know,
definitely
more of that.
Something I want to talk about that we have not yet is the fact that Dany was facing the man who slayed her
father. That's
what
I was going to mention.
Mm-hmm. Please take it away, Anna.
Just for the cinematography of that moment, starting the episode off with showing Jamie's face with Dany's voice over it, I just thought was such a strong out-of-the-gate moment.
Yes.
And really, he's such an amazing actor. Seeing his expression of true... I mean, yes, he's defending himself, but I think we see, and the reason we call this Jamie's evolution is we really see him coming to terms with it, who he is as a man, what he's done in his life, what he's going to do, and how he's going to maybe spend his final days defending and believing in. And I think to contrast that with Dany being so harsh and so hard-pressing about his fate, and then we slowly see Dany's world start to crumble, which we'll talk about later, but we slowly see her stance start to diminish as Jamie is starting to get validated. And I think for him to be at Winterfell in the North, to be validated by people that he didn't expect to be validated by, was a really strong way to open the show and really lead into this fact of, yes, we're going to see a lot about relationships, a lot about humanity, and a lot about Jamie coming to terms with who he is as a man.
I got to jump in here.
Steven in
the
booth.
Hi, Steven.
With Jamie, actually, the name of the episode, they just updated it 2 minutes after you guys started the episode.
Really?
Oh, no.
It went from the Rightful Queen to A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms.
Oh.
Okay.
Oh.
That's
nice.
Pretty amazing. Because that's pretty amazing. Because is that Jamie or is that Brienne? And it's both
Seven
of them now.
Kingdoms.
Yeah.
I think that's incredible.
I mean, that sort of, that new title lends itself to our third topic that we'll get into later about Army of the Living.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms. Because it really was everybody coming together and saying what they wanted to say to that person who they probably haven't seen for a few seasons. So it was that union of the Seven
Absolutely.
Kingdoms and our knight with them,
yeah.
Really.
I was going to say, it's almost
K-N-I-G-H-T.
A play on...
K-N-I-G-H-T.
Yes, but I was going to say, it's almost a play on words if you want to take it that way.
Or you could see it that way.
No, it's like,
cool,
yeah,
it's the knight. For sure.
As Sir Davos would say, a knight of the Seven Kingdoms.
Only
That's
Ryan,
right. He
you
ain't
guys.
The best reader.
Only Ryan.
He would. Well, I remember the scene where he's reading
yeah,
Shireen,
yeah.
And she's like, "The K is silent.
Yeah.
Don't mouth the words. Work. Children do that."
It was great.
But the thing about Jamie and his redemption is, we do realize as the viewers, it's still incomplete, right?
Mm-hmm.
He is the person that pushed Bran off the tower. Mm-hmm. He is the person that saved Brienne. But even seasons later, years later in the show's flow, he was the person that threatened to catapult a baby into a wall to end a siege. So we still have him treading on both sides of that. And his fate because of that could have easily tipped toward death. And his fate was totally in the hands of Brienne and Bran. Brienne mm-hmm. did her part to support him, and Bran did not reveal other
exactly.
parts of that character that could have really damned him right. And had Arya walk in the room with her dagger again. Who knows?
I want to argue, too, that with Bran saying the things we do for love, I think Bran was trying to tell Jaime, I forgive you. It's yes. okay. It's
we
part of a larger
see that under the tree.
It's a larger plan. And so I think that's our first inkling of Bran having this moment of true. Bran is a, sort of an anomaly. We'll talk about him later too, but we really see him showing Jaime forgiveness and then Jaime going on its trickle down effect of Jaime forgiving other people and having these apologies.
Yeah, I mean Bran kind of says, you know, I am who I am today because you pushed me out that tower. I mean, if Bran wanted to go back using his green sight, he probably could and manipulate things. But I think he has seen the way things played out is the way they should be. And every bad decision that Jaime has made has led him to the person he is today. And so Bran was kind of saying, mm-hmm. I'm not mad at anyone. We're where we're supposed to be. And right. this is what it is. So it was nice to get that apology, though, from Jaime to Bran.
It was nice to have that moment with them sitting out in the courtyard, wherever they were together. Was it Godswood?
Yeah, but what? There? I believe so, in the by the Weirwood trees.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
But he says, so we get kind of a revelation, maybe a reveal, maybe something that's foreshadowing. I mean, almost everything is at this point. Everything on screen has significance. But when Bran and Jaime are having their moment, Bran says, how do you know there isn't afterwards?
Right.
When Jaime asks, so what's going on afterwards? Mm-hmm. Because, I mean, here's the guy who sees into the future. Maybe we should ask him how it's going to turn out. And so Jaime finally does, because no one else seems to. But
pet
he says,
of this episode.
I know. It's like, come on. Talk to Bran a little bit. And Bran says, how do you know there is one? And that right there, I think, is going to ring true for a lot of people after this next episode. We'll get into that with predictions. Maybe we can pick who's going to die, who's going to live. Bran knows things that he's not saying, but I think he's strategically not telling people because it's the old adage, you know, if you knew.
Well, they would do things differently.
If you knew your destiny, would you? And there's also the, you know, people often come to meet their destiny on the path they choose to avoid it, right? So it's Bran's in a particular position where he can't reveal too much for fear of changing the future, but for he does confide in Jaime and lets him know there might not be a future for you, for me, for anyone, which I thought was a pretty important note.
Yeah, and we get that Jaime and Tyrion sort of brotherly love reunion.
Yep. That was nice.
Yes. I mean, as Jeremy has said, everyone sort of has had a best friend in this world, and now Tyrion has his back, and it's Jaime. And they talked about how, you know, if their dad only knew their last two sons were defending Winterfell right now, how upset he'd be. And they got to talk about the baby a bit as well.
Yes, and Tyrion, or Jaime certainly is still under the belief that it is a true story, and we're all still
real.
Again, we go back and forth.
She
and
was
we don't
drinking
know.
Last episode, so I really don't think so.
No. It's Cersei, but it's Westeros times.
Cersei
they really care?
Said to Joffrey in season one, what you say is the truth is the truth. Mm-hmm. What you make the truth is the truth. Because at that point he was saying, you know, Sansa's that's not what happened with, you know, Sansa. Sansa saw me. I was crying, and he was upset because he had Micah. Yep. They had just killed Micah. And so she basically told him, what you say is the truth. What you make is the truth is the truth. And I think she's doing that with her pregnancy.
Absolutely. A final element in the Tyrion and Jaime reunion. They've had a couple of reunions. We did get that classic line, I'll never be the golden lion again, but for you, whoremongering is still an option.
So, glad to know that's still in play.
Still at heart. You know, to piggyback off that point, I mean, I feel like
the whoremongering?
The golden, not being golden lions anymore. I mean, if you just look, if you take snapshots of these two characters from season one and you compare them to how they look now, I think the transformation that they've made, not only, you know, in the, you know, metaphorical sense, but actual physical transformations. You look at these guys, they now have beards, their hair is dark. You know, you looked at Tyrion and Jaime in the first season were golden lions. They had this golden, beautiful hair. And then you look at them now, bright colored armor, gold, you know, fancy. And now they're dark, dirty, Yeah, they're no longer.
They look like they belong in Winterfell.
They're no longer golden lions, and their physical, you know, their wardrobe and the physical appearance definitely reflects that.
A quick note about Cersei too. Of course, according to the prophecy, she was only going to have 3 children, so it begs the question of: is there really a 4th? Will it be a miscarriage?
And will she die in childbirth?
Will she die in childbirth? And for Cersei, her one redeeming quality, and I talked about this last week, was that she has this love for her children. And it was interesting to see and have the answer to who was Cersei without her children. And I think that that aspect has also driven Jaime to Winterfell. But Tyrion still believing she's pregnant just leads right back into that, is that Cersei's redeeming quality is her love for her children and her love for her family, her immediate family. What is she willing to do? So Tyrion thinking that she's pregnant, I think, gives him the motivation that no, she's still going to want peace in this world for her unborn child.
Well, we did kind of hear that essentially the last 10 good ideas he thought he had over the last couple seasons, every instinct has been wrong. So we'll see he's gotten yet this next thing wrong.
Yeah,
as well.
I was going to ask you, I mean, do you guys think that Tyrion is actually, and this will transition into Dany's birthright, has Tyrion been advising Dany correctly? Do you feel like he's been a good hand?
He's made mistakes that were somewhat unforeseeable. I think the real problem is that Tyrion's mentality does not align with Dany's goals. Mm-hmm. I mean, she wants to be quick to conquer, and Tyrion's the kind of guy who that's not the way he would play it. But to find a compromise in war often leads to no victors. So, I mean, there's not much he could have done. He did with what her goals were.
She's just not listening, I feel like. I know. Anytime he advises her, he advised her not to take Drogon to save Jon. You know, he wanted her to stay. She didn't do that. She burned the Tarly's family. I mean, I can think of several times he's advised her, and we've seen it on screen, and she not listen. I can't really tell you, like, a whole lot of times that he's advised her, and I'm like, good idea, Tyrion, and she followed through with it.
Very early on when they sort of
met up,
he did advise her well, and she did take his advice. But yes, we haven't seen them really on the same page for a long time.
He doesn't have the credibility in those areas of life and death and of military. In The Godfather, they have the line where they talk about Tom Hayden being essentially a peacetime consigliere, not a wartime consigliere. He is a peacetime hand of the king. He would be good in court politics and making sure things are balanced, but we've seen the limitations of him. He talked about when he was meeting with Tywin during the War of the Five Kings. Mm-hmm. I'm not familiar with strategy, but I think I'm taking to it. I'm getting it. Mm-hmm. Maybe not quite as much. He didn't read the right books for the mind and the whetstone on strategy.
Well, I disagree. I mean, if you're going to look at Tyrion from a position of a strategist and a diplomat, he's very strong in it. The unfortunate thing is that his emotions can get the better of him sometimes, which is the case with this and Cersei. But also, you have to realize that it's a character that is written very well in that they do with what they have with reality.
Right.
And this show is a show that deals with a lack of reality at times. So he's being blamed for mistakes that are caused by a lack of reality. Because if everything was made based on reality, Jon Snow would not be alive. And these undead creatures would not be marching inwards towards the north right now, towards Winterfell. So all of his decisions have been based on fact, and unfortunately, this is not a position he can be in where facts actually
matter. Which I think is why he wants to talk to Bran.
One other final element is that there might be some leakage and information coming out from Dany's inner circle as well. There's a lot of conjecture about that, which would also, he would be a little more blameless if that's the instance.
You guys have all, y'all have very fair points about Tyrion. We've seen him take on leadership roles in circumstances that were less than optimal. He was left to be Hand of the King at King's Landing, and then there was the Battle of Blackwater.
Of course.
And that was, who wants to be in charge of that? getting siege. So, but he handled it with stride.
Yeah, that's true.
But they would have lost if it weren't for Tywin. So, like, he would have failed. He also was left to take over Meereen when Dany left. Mm-hmm. And then when she got back, things were in shambles. Was that his fault? No, but if it was under anybody else's watch, would it have ended worse? Mm-hmm. Probably.
Probably.
So now we're in another situation where he's hand of the queen. in a situation and circumstances, like Steven said, that are out of the ordinary.
Now, question for you guys. Is he hand to the rightful queen? Mm. Let's get into our next subject. Danny's birthright is our next subject.
Yes.
And I still like the first title that we had of this episode, The Rightful Queen. Just so you guys know, it's not our fault. The title, HBO is not announcing titles. And we're doing this on East Coast time. So we didn't have the title. We thought it was The Rightful Queen, which is our subject now.
Before we get into that topic, if you guys have any quarrels with us about that, if you want to yell at us, do it in the comments. Okay, we love to read them and see that. If you guys like our show, please give it a thumbs up and give us a rating on iTunes. We love to get your feedback and we love your support. Thank you for making all this possible. This studio, this show, none of it would be possible without fans like you. So we really appreciate it. You guys can check us out on YouTube, iTunes, Spotify.
And Apple.
And Shazam.
And Apple and Shazam. I mean, really, just go look up AfterBuzz in your favorite platform. Find us and give us some love. We love you right back. Thanks again.
Awesome. Kristen. So, Danny, is she the rightful leader? I feel like a lot of this episode, everyone was questioning her. Mm-hmm. And Jeremy, you said pretty much in every scene, she was weakened.
Yeah, Danny went around trying to shore up some of the kind of real-world alliances, right?
Right. From the very beginning.
She had a pretty good conversation with Jorah, but essentially her other conversations with the Stark children, Sansa and Jon Snow, did not go well at all. She left weakened in every situation. And essentially, of course, she's viewed as the mother of dragons and has that mystical property. And of course, she has thousands of Dothraki and Unsullied that are loyal to her. But inside those walls and some of the people that still have major roles to play, she's been knocked down a peg or two in almost everyone's eyes.
Mm-hmm. I love Dany because she is such a complex character to me. I've loved her since she was introduced to us on the show. Mm-hmm. And I like the moment she has with Sansa where we really do start to see her, something in there, something cracking.
It
like,
started,
okay, like,
yeah.
Who left who? Like, did I come here for Jon? Did Jon come here for me? Like, what is that? And I saw, being the diehard romantic that I am, yeah. I saw something in her sort of weaken or crumble a little bit in a beautiful way. And then when Sansa comes in saying, what about the North? What happens to the North? And we have lost our family, we've pledged, mm-hmm. and all of this stuff happens, and then you see Dany come right back strong, pulls her hand away, and we see her as, you know, Daenerys Targaryen. And so I think in Dany, she is going to have a lot of inner struggle between Jon, between, I think there's going to be something with the dragons, and I think that she is going to have a lot of inner struggle between being the woman that she wants to be on the throne and being the woman that she knows she can be and be helpful to people.
We need a Dany evolution. Yes. Because, you know, at this point, it's just like, it's all about her birthright. It's all about her ruling. And that's not what this world needs anymore.
She's not reading the room. She's not reading the room and reading the terrain.
She's not reading the people's needs.
She's obsessed with birthright.
But talking about that Sansa, before we let go of that moment, I just want to say, when she first sat down, I loved how they were empowering women. And this show does a great job of doing that. She was like, we were both female rulers to people who did not want to be ruled by us. I mean, they were finding common ground.
Yeah.
And then unfortunately, you know, she's like, I don't like that Dany said, I'm fighting Jon's war now. What makes this Jon's war?
Yeah.
This isn't Jon's war.
All right, Kristen.
It's like, yeah, she's kind of using it to manipulate Sansa.
I agree.
And it doesn't work like that up here in the North, right?
No, it don't.
Because the North, they're proud people. They want their independence, and they had it. And they basically have it. And Dany comes in and says, no, you're under my rule. And, like, says who, right? Says you? Says Jon? Says, you know, who? So, yeah, you guys are right on the nose. Every single approach that she's taking ever since she got here has been not according to plan.
Absolutely.
She wants people to blindly follow her based on birthright.
Absolutely.
And Jorah notices
that. Can only take
this.
You so far.
Jorah notices, and you were talking about loyalty. You're talking about how the Dothraki and everyone, you know, the Unsullied are loyal. But are they? We got Grey Worm and Missandei talking about how, yeah, when she's got her throne, let's get out of here. Let's go to
Knock. They want us to go to the beach. She wants to see the beach again.
But it's basically like,
dip her toes
they don't
in the
even,
water.
They don't even truly believe in the world that she's trying to make because they can't picture it. They can't picture this conquered world. It's too big. People don't necessarily have their goals aligned with Daenerys's anymore. Now that mm-hmm. they're being, you know, when we get into the Army of the Living, everyone's being approached with this real, tangible idea of their own mortality. The time is limited. All that's real is family, love, and the experience that you have now. And no longer is this game that Danny is trying to win an important priority for everybody.
Even her best friend from season one, Jorah, is, I feel like, her last friend. We were talking about that earlier. And he approaches her. And I don't feel like he's coming like, girl, you're doing a great job. He's like, hey, I have a few suggestions. Yes, I was heartbroken when I wasn't your hand.
Classic Jorah.
But also classic Jorah, he was like, you chose the right guy, which was amazing, you know, for him to come around and say that and to help encourage her to really make amends with Tyrion, which I feel like she sort of does, trying to protect him later on.
Absolutely.
Really
quick, I actually want to point out something you said, Jeremy, in our watch along, which I thought was brilliant, is that, Dany is saying that she's fighting. I do, props.
We're just all repeating Jeremy Dan in the watch along.
Yeah, absolutely. I love what you said about how, you know, Dany's saying she's fighting Jon's war, and it's like, no. Taking the North is a logical step in winning the battle for the Seven Kingdoms. So whether she loves Jon or doesn't, it's sort of irrelevant because this is going to be part of her plan anyway.
Right.
Yeah, it was a step that she had to take.
It was a step that she had to take.
And before we depart from this topic, one thing that was, from the opening scene, remember her paying attention to kind of her needs, her wants. Mm-hmm. Remember, she started the story about her and her brother and the bedtime story about all the things they would do. She really put herself out there. She probably saw that in about 5 minutes we're going to be beheading someone, and it's going to be an era, it's going to be a moment of strength and unity. And in essence, that rug was pulled out from under her. That was the start of the credibility being taken away from Dany.
The last thing I'll say, too, is it's very interesting when we have Dany versus Sansa, because Dany, out of the two of them, is the only one that has seen the Army of the Dead. Mm-hmm. And so for her to still maintain this birthright thing and not see the bigger picture, it's a little beyond me at this point. I think that she is so fixated on it, wants it so badly that she can't even... Yes, she has this idea that she has to help Jon and that she needs to be helpful in this battle, but she is still not let go of her larger goal of winning the throne.
I also just like seeing Sansa and Dany interact because they have very similar backstories in a way.
Yes.
They're both women of a bloodline that owns basically a section of the Seven Kingdoms, and then they're married away to people, brutally treated, and then end up back in this position of power, and now they're vying against each other for it. Even though Sansa's for Jon's sake, that doesn't necessarily mean that's the case if Jon doesn't survive.
Absolutely. Yeah. Great point, Stephen. And I want to get to, before we end Dany's birthright, the fact that this last scene with Jon and Dany erases that birthright.
Oh,
he
my
didn't
God.
Rape her. He loved her.
Oh my God. What an amazing moment we've all been waiting for. How is she going to react? I mean, Jon Snow, we saw his reaction last episode to finding out this news was kind of just the gears are turning. How does this change things? How does this, you know? And just her reaction was so much more like dramatic. I loved it. You could tell. Immediate skepticism.
I can feel Ryan right now.
She was skeptical.
Yes,
she was cynical.
She
immediately
was
like, "So your best friend and you're the..." So she didn't believe him. She
it
didn't
was
believe
very
him.
High school.
Yeah,
your best friend and your brother knew this, and you believe it,
and no one else, and no one. Yeah.
So she's immediately, you know, she's blinded by her power, lust for power, based on this. This primary motivator that's honestly kept her alive all these years, the need to reclaim that throne, has really gotten her through some tough times, and she's been a successful conqueror. But now we see, who was it that said, you gave up your kingship for her, would she do the same? Would you do the same?
Sam Will Tarly said that last week.
Would she do the same? Yeah, last week,
I'm
last episode.
I'm hoping, early prediction, that Dany realizes that Jon is what the people want. You know, and either Jon or Dany is going to make it out of this show alive. They're not going to be dual rulers. It is not happening, people. So you're either going to lose Jon or you're either going to lose Dany. And I think the only way we get Dany's evolution is if she dies to protect Jon.
Yeah, the true Targaryen. He's the combination of ice and fire. I mean, it just makes sense.
And
but
the rightful king.
You know what's crazy, though?
What?
Is if Jon has the Night King in a fight and tells Dany to blow dragon fire all over
and
both
kill
them
both.
Except
well, he's Targaryen.
That would be, like, the main proof. Like, hey, Dany,
In season one, we actually did see, to Steven's point, that John was fireproof. He actually takes fire off the wall and throws it at the White Walker to protect Gior Mormont. And from the White Walkers that they were trying to, like, analyze why...
No, his hand was burned.
It was burned? Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't think it was.
Yeah, I think he had bandage.
No,
on his hand.
I don't think he did.
Yeah.
Well, I say no. What do you guys say? Go back and look at it. But I think he's fireproof. And I think that's why he could ride the dragon.
Well, the dragon. But like Ryan was saying, she's so lustful. Dany is so lustful for power and so obsessed with her own destiny that, she's not putting these clues together of, like, okay, John was resurrected from the dead. He can ride the dragons. There's so many. And the fact that John has not lied to her yet. He's the most noble man she knows. He came to her saying, I forfeit my right to be king of Winterfell.
Maybe to a fault. You know, in the scene in the dragon pit when they talked about, essentially, couldn't you have lied once? And Theon asked him about that and others. Maybe he's being too honest here as well.
She's been so abrasive to every single character in this episode. She starts off, you know, saying, oh, so, your sister said she sent an army, but I see one man with one hand. Oh. And you're like, dang, like, come on, Dany.
Well, she hates Jaime for a lot of reasons.
And then she's talking to Tyrion. She's like, yeah, this is how it's going down. You're either a traitor or a fool. And it's like, Dany, do you realize you're the hand of, you know what I mean? Okay, so that's another. And then she talks down to, tries to manipulate Sansa. Doesn't want to, you know, give into the fact that. Yeah. She needs to fight this war for the living. What about the North, she says?
The chat says his hand was burned.
It was burned.
Okay. It actually had a little sizzling bacon sound effect in
it. Yeah, when he grabbed it, he goes, ah! And then a few episodes later, he's wearing a bandage.
I don't remember the bandage, but I just really want him to be the rightful king and then not have, you know, be of any affected by fire. I feel like that would be amazing.
But I don't think she's questioning his like... honor of him lying about this. I think she's questioning his friends trying to manipulate him to the throne.
The question is, I think the deeper question is, if Dany's so obsessed with birthright, is she going to let birthright prevail, meaning she's going to stand behind John as being the rightful heir to the throne, or is she going to... Dany putting herself first again would sort of combat her own story of birthright being the ruler of everything. Mm-hmm. She would be going against herself by knowing this information about John.
And I think you pointed this out during our watch along, Anna, the fact that she wasn't even concerned about their relationship, their love, and what this news meant for them. It was all about the throne.
Mm-hmm. It was all about her.
And
when Dany had her visions in the House of the Undying, we saw that she had a moment where she was approaching the throne, and then she heard her dragons screaming and decided to step away from that power to go and find and protect what she really truly loves and cares about. Now, we saw that the throne room was all burnt up and there was snow falling on it. Who knows, maybe Jon Snow is going to be sitting on it. But I think that might be kind of a foreshadow or maybe indicative to her nature that maybe love will prevail over her lust for power. She will sacrifice and or step away from it. And if she does end up having a baby with Jon, maybe she'll die giving birth to it. I mean, the witch did say only life can pay for life. Ooh. So, I mean, a lot of things might happen, but I think it's all leading to the fact that, I don't know, Dany will be sitting on that throne.
Yeah. Can I ask you guys a question?
Yeah, absolutely.
I might be ignorant. But is it Targaryens are the only ones that can control dragons, right? Is that because of their bloodline, or is that just because Dany gave birth to them in terms of, like...
I think it's their bloodline, yeah.
So then, couldn't there be a moment where the dragons take an order from John?
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
I agree with that. 100% could be in play, Steven.
Especially Rhaegal, whose name is after his father. Rhaegar.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
What was your dragon prediction?
So, Optical Illusion, he left a comment on my Instagram page saying that his prediction is that Drogon will actually... Drogon is actually named after Khal Drogo.
Mm-hmm.
So the guy in my little chat said that he thinks that Drogon will actually kill Viserion,
which is now
dragon,
an ice dragon,
who was Viserys, her brother, and that's what happened in real life. Khal Drogo killed Viserys.
The Crown of Gold.
Yes. Well, I don't think it'll happen that way. That'd be amazing. No. Maybe it could, because they could melt. There could be some gold above, you know, Viserys, and Drogon could, you know, melt it with
Imagine
his fire.
Imagine if Rhaegal's the only dragon left alive, and Jon has control of him.
I've thought about that. And then Jon is the natural rider of that dragon. They've already bonded.
And then you have maybe a child that was born of ice and fire.
And I think
between Jon's, you know, Jon is the child born of
ice and fire.
Yeah, the Stark. And the Targaryen.
I want to say, too, real quick, I keep going back to Sansa and Dany, but I just think it's really amazing the way this episode set them up, even in episode one in this season. I just want to say that I think both women, as powerful and strong as they are, were really examining their flaws. And so with Sansa, she hasn't seen the Army of the Dead. She thinks she knows everything. She saved the day with the Vale coming in when they were fighting against Ramsay. And so I think in her mind, so far, she's been right about pretty much everything. And her Achilles heel is the fact that she thinks she knows everything. Same thing for Dany. Dany is not taking advice from her council, besides Jorah a little bit. And I think that her Achilles heel is going to be, again, this zest for power and being the rightful heir to the throne, but also thinking that she knows everything about when it comes to war strategy and what they're going to do. And I just think that that is going to play into both of these females, their roles and positionings in the show.
I'm excited for next episode when we're not talking about who's going to rule the throne and instead about who's still alive and everyone who died. Because obviously, next episode's going to be the war. Mm. Okay, getting into our next topic, Army of the Living. So we came up with this as a group because we felt like this episode was really like a celebration of life. Lots of moments of humanity where characters came together and they sort of said things that they may have taken longer to say if they thought they had longer, but they feel like they only have tonight to really make those reunions, make those apologies, have some sexual relations for the first time.
I was joking that it was like a long slumber party sleepover, like that no one wanted to end. Like Tyrion's like, more wine, everyone. Like it was like
there was
part singing, party at Winterfell, slumber party. Like it was just like kind of, get all your feelings out. Now's tonight. Tonight's the night. Now's the time.
Well, it is the time. We're not going to have moments like this going forward. It's almost like if we're going to have a little, throwback to the old drinking games of days past, I mean, it's going to be now. I remember after the last episode, one of my buddies called me. He's like, what do you think about that whole thing with, Jon and Daenerys flying around in their dragons? I mean, that was pretty quick, And I'm like, dude, because that's the last lovely moment they're going to have. Like, that's all we get now. So this is kind of a celebration of that, of really giving the reunions that we saw in the first episode, really giving them put some meat on those bones, so to speak.
I want to talk about Gendry and Arya because we had predicted, I mean, I had in our Watchathon show that it'd be Gendry and Sansa just because I didn't see like Arya ever wanting love in her life.
Well, and even that relationship was almost kind of like a brother sister kind of thing. He was kind of like her older brother when they first met. It kind of seemed that way. Like
I was not prepared for this, but I'm glad that she had her first snout, and it was to someone who probably she could take in a fight, but it would be,
a
good fight.
She wore him out. Did you see him passed out afterwards?
Oh, God. She feels so young to me. I can't.
Yeah, definitely. But one thing about that is when Arya went to the House of Black and White, it is to lose a lot of your humanity. It's to set it aside and become a faceless man or faceless woman. And in leaving, we remember she redeclared that she's Arya Stark of Winterfell and went back to her family. And it took her a while being cold, and you could start to see her warm up in some of the reunions. And this is her really being back human again. I mean, when you are opening yourself up to love and you're realizing I want a human sensation and a real sensation this way, that's not the kind of thing that I think a faceless man would do in the face of possible death.
I thought it was just what you have to pay for one of those weapons.
Oh, come on. Speaking of her weapon, we have to talk about her weapon for a second, guys, because I am in my rewatch, and I'm to the point where they're talking about, like, showing her how to use the pointy end. That's the first step of learning
Stick
to fight.
Stick him with the pointy
Stick
end.
Stick him with the pointy end. So I was so excited to see that her new spear has two pointy ends. She is breaking those rules, especially when it comes to her weapons.
So it's a spear.
It's a spear.
With two spearheads, so one on either side. And I think we saw from the blueprint that they detach or something, right? So we're going to really be able to see a new kind of weapon in Westeros. This, I don't think anyone's ever had anything like this. It's either spears, swords.
She's the Darth Maul of Westeros.
She really is a Jedi, isn't she?
She is.
I think her and Gendry are a pretty sweet match. I like it. I'm into it.
Yeah.
Can't wait to see her use that thing and whatever she calls it, whatever you call it, the black spear.
You're naming it right now. Yeah. It's got to be something.
Everything
like,
has a name.
Has no name.
Oh, spear has no name. Oh, Stephen for the win tonight.
Another element before we leave the Army of the Living, we talked about being.
Oh, we have plenty of that.
The most human episode. I found it to be the funniest episode of Game of Thrones. So I really have to take the hat off to the writers. In a way, it was almost like a movie like Diner. If for those of you who maybe have seen that, of groups of friends in conversations that last a little too long, but really develop the people a lot and show the sentimentality and the humor of the reunion of the Night's Watch.
Yeah.
What would we call it? The circle Last of idiots watch. Or the circle of misfits.
I love how.
There was some of the best writing and most humorous writing. And it's kind of shocking. I think we all found ourselves laughing so much in an episode before we know probably a third of the people we just saw will die.
It was nice to see that reunion, the Night's Watch reunion with
Ed. Last Watch on the wall.
The Last Watch.
And Ghost!
Yeah, where's he been at?
I know.
Very good point. We have Ghost now. That's cool.
And we're wondering if some of the dead direwolves are going to be fighting for the undead army.
There are some dead direwolves in the crypt. Bran's plan, maybe we'll talk. But I like how Ed says, last man left, burn the rest of us.
Yes.
I mean, that's really, it kind of brings it all home. You know, there were so many times, and I feel like it was on purpose, really, to get the viewer to understand. There's so many times that was said, we're going to die here at Winterfell. We're going to die after tonight. We're dead. We're basically already dead. Everyone was accepting the fact that this could be it, and it probably is. So it's funny to see these main characters wrestle with an acceptance of their own mortality and that it's about to end, and to see what people do in that moment. What do they do?
They
get together and they have drinks and they reminisce.
Yeah. And they sing to each other.
They say what needs to be said, say the unsaid things.
Mm-hmm. I love what you said in our watch along for everyone who was with us, and if you weren't, I'll say it again, when you were talking about John reuniting with his Night's Watch men, and that being, in some ways, more of his family, really, than the Starks. Mm. I mean, you can argue both, right? And they're both his family, but it was just interesting in that moment. He almost seemed more connected to them in that moment than he did with his Stark family, which is
very it's like that's their clan, that's their group, and then you have the Hound up on the top, kind of by himself with Arya, but kind of by himself. And then Beric Dondarrion comes
She's
in.
Beric is too much.
I
feel like Arya and the Hound made peace in that moment.
I agree with you, Kristen.
Because their first interaction was definitely not peaceful, but him saying, you know what, I fought for you.
Yeah. She's trying to call him out, and he's like, no, like.
And we got, speaking of the wall, Samwell giving his Tarly sword to Jorah because his father, Gior, taught him how to be a man.
Yes.
That was a sweet moment.
The Tarly sword called Heartsbane. So, and it looked like a pretty hefty sword. Jorah didn't pull it all the way out, but it looks like a long sword, you know, with a very, very long grip. I wish I knew like sword terms, but it definitely looks huge. All right. What is it?
Claymore.
The Claymore, yes.
Like Claymore.
A long Claymore. Sure.
All right.
I was going to say, speaking of Jorah, he also reunited with his cousin, one of my favorite characters.
Lady Mormont.
Lady Mormont. And I love her. Talking with Kristen, what you said about strong, powerful women, she was not backing down. He was like, go to the crypts, which we'll talk about too. Why do people think the crypts are a safe place? It's beyond me. But he's like, go to the crypts, it'll be safe. It's not safe for you to fight. And she's like, excuse me, where have you been? I have been here with our house, and I have been fighting. You know what I mean? Like, I really love her having that moment.
And it's like she's not going to actually physically fight, but she needs to be in the presence of her.
Yes, she's and you have, she's going to.
She's been practicing.
And I love her walking through her bannermen, and they all bow down to her. And I love her saying at the end, you know, good luck to you, cousin. Like, I hope I see you on the other side.
We need girl power. She is going to take, she's going to stab someone right through the heart. She's going to take down some lights.
I think, I mean, yeah, she might
end up on the throne.
She might be a warrior. I don't know. I'm not saying she's not, just from her stature, like, whatever.
I'm offended.
I mean, Tyrion isn't the best warrior. It's just the reality of it. But his presence amongst the people that he needs to command is important. It's a symbol. And for her strength and her ability to inspire others, I think is going to be more of an asset necessarily than, you know, maybe her physical ability to do damage. I think
I hope we see Shireen Part 2, who is talking with Davos.
Oh, no, so cute.
Taking some whites down.
I hope so. I think they were sort of leaning towards that. I love with the reunion, though, that we also see that Dro has a little bit of family around. Like, he's been this loner this entire time. We knew his dad was at the wall, and his dad didn't make it. So it's nice to see that he sort of has some connection to his house still.
To touch on the little baby Shireen, I think that moment was really for us to realize a little bit more of what's at stake, right? Because we have all these warriors who are about to go into battle, but we so often forget that the majority of people in this world are common people, just regular old simple farmers, peasants, whatever they are, and it's just humanizes people even more. What's at stake? Innocence. We have innocent people who are going to be down in these crypts. The people of Winterfell who we're trying to protect. Which, by the way, I'm sorry, and I know we'll get into this in Bran's plan, but you're sending people to a basement. Why are you putting people in the crypts? Why are you putting people in a basement? You know?
I don't know.
You can't win a fight in a basement.
I want to talk about my favorite part of the episode. We have a new political structure forming, okay? Yes. We have Brienne and Tormund, them flirting a bit with each other, and him saying, why aren't you a knight? I'd knight you 10 times. Goes up to me.
That wasn't politics. That was the other thing.
Yes, but it led to something more serious, which usually humor and love does, in a way. And
we're talking
about
suckling at a giant, right?
Oh!
That was so great to get the backstory. Just to pause that real story about Tormund Giantsbane, like where Giantsbane, he's like creating his own legend.
Yeah,
like,
he did.
To say where his name came from.
Well, I feel like he was kind of fighting off Jaime in that moment to be like, she's mine, don't get any ideas.
He's like, check out this story. So I killed a giant, and then I go into bed with his wife, and then it kind of took a turn.
And he, instead of calling him King Slayer, which is much more powerful, he said King Killer. So he's already downplaying his name.
That's great writing. They call you King Killer.
I'm sure someone
does. Okay, but that wasn't my favorite part. So my favorite part was the fact that Jamie actually said, you know what, I'm going to knight you. And she's like, I can't, I'm a lady, knights aren't ladies. And the fact that Jamie is like, no, I'm going to do it, I can do what I want, you know what I mean? And took this knight to really honor her. You could see how much it really meant to her. I mean, this is something she never thought would be attainable to her. Mm-hmm. And the fact that this is happening, I feel like this is foreshadowing to the political structure of Game of Thrones. Whatever it is in the end, it's not going to be a throne. It's going to be new. It's going to be progressive. Women can be knights in this new political structure. I'm excited about that. This moment made me excited for where we're going to end up.
Heck yeah.
You know what Danny's reaction is going to be to Brienne saying she's knighted?
What?
So your best friend and your looks like a lover.
True.
Danny's so mad at everyone for everything.
Before we end the Army of the Living, we have to talk about a moment that Jeremy Dan literally shed tears over in the episode.
Yes.
You know, you guys, I'm not all my tough exterior as I look. I also have a peep marshmallow soft interior. But
like a peep.
Sansa has been hardcore, tough as nails for the last several episodes since she's been the Lady of Winterfell. And even, you know, with what she's had to deal with, she's learned from all these people, Cersei, Littlefinger, etc. But that reunion with Theon, who was the person that protected her and saved her when she escaped from Winterfell. And that was the first time we saw her trembling and tearing up, I believe. So that's, I mean, I was just method acting a little bit by tearing up as well. But you know, the show can move you to that because it was an episode of these highs and sentimentality and humor and all of that. And this was a very different moment. I thought that was just an awesome little scene within a scene.
It was a warm embrace. And a lot of these reunions, we haven't seen that because it's been so the relationships have been so complicated that it's kind of been like a timid, mm-hmm. you know, careful tiptoe into the situation.
Or they've been very jokey.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. But this one was one person who was completely unsure of how he'd be received, being received in a way that breaks our hearts. And it was beautiful.
And mm-hmm. in a way that lessens Danny's stake.
Even
because
more.
Because Danny could, yeah. was getting pissed about the ships and where's your sister and this and that. And then exactly. you see the moment, you see her, the camera, beautiful. I just love the cinematography in the mm-hmm, show and the mm-hmm. way that they do these camera angles. You see the shot of Danny looking at Sansa, looking at Theon, and she's like, wow. And then when they embrace, she's like, okay. Like, that's another person lost for my camp. Yeah. And I just thought it was brilliant.
I do like what Yara's doing, though. Yes. She's saying, I'm going to be here, a place where you guys can retreat to. Because as Jeremy Dan said earlier, I feel like they... I don't know why everyone's fighting in Winterfell. We need to retreat a bit south and plan.
The reason is because there's so many people in between Winterfell yeah. and any further south.
That mm-hmm. they'll just more army.
The army of the dead will just get bigger. So they're trying to, like...
That's true. That's a great point.
As soon as possible, yeah.
Yeah, I just... I like that Yara... I really do think that we will be seeing Yara. I really do think we're going to have to retreat back towards Yara
to
and
the Iron Island
and the ship.
Those dominoes will keep flipping and turning blue. Yeah.
In the intro, the sequence is what you're talking about.
Yeah, but Theon coming to help, it shows that loyalty and family and love are sometimes more important than strategic...
Well, I don't forget his evolution as well.
I don't buy it.
Redemption. He's on his redemption path. It leads to death. He will die, and it's going to be great, and he'll be redeemed for everything bad that he did. Let's move on to Bran's plan, and I know you wanted to talk about this, Ryan. You have this lovely map picture that we had to tear you away from, you and Jaydan, before the episode. She wouldn't stop staring at it.
Steve went into the episode. Steven found an actual shot we pull on screen, and by the way, if you're listening on a podcast like iTunes, yeah, be sure to check out YouTube because we have sometimes some visuals and you can see us, you know, see what we look like. But we got this map pulled up. we got this map pulled up of Winterfell, and this is from the show, so this is straight from the source of TV. It might be different in the books, but this is what it is. The entire map of Winterfell, you see the perimeter, mm-hmm. Fencing and walls. You have Godswood on the east side there. This map is oriented towards the north. You have all the different battalions, squadrons, I'm not sure exactly the terms, but you have, you know, different army settlements, formations up there in the north to meet this, in the fields, so to speak, to meet the army of the dead. And you have Bran's plan is to be in the Godswood next to the Weirwood trees.
And Theon has volunteered to protect him.
Theon is going to protect him there.
And the dragons aren't going to be too close, but not too far.
We don't know.
No, they said that.
Yeah, mm-hmm. but... Who's going to be on the dragon? I guess we'll find out next episode.
John and Danny obviously are going to be on the dragons.
Mm-hmm. And most everyone else who can't fight will be in the crypts.
Worst plan ever.
Which we think the crypts are on the north side of Winterfell. We have Mormont's there on the west side. It seems like there's going to be a last stand here of some kind. There's no way they can win.
There's not winning in this episode.
No.
This next episode that's coming.
From what it looks like...
You don't think there'll be three episodes of just a big party afterwards?
Fair. It's going to be... Yeah.
But the question is, it's not like how, you know, whether or not they're going to win. It's how will they lose? Mm-hmm. How will this go for them? You're right.
Wait, you think they're going to lose? I mean, they also talked about defeating. Yeah. Main plan is to defeat the Night King because obviously he has turned most of these people into White Walkers, and the White Walkers have turned the Whites and rose them from the dead.
Right. So cut the head off of the snake mm-hmm. is what they want to
right.
do.
Right. Exactly.
Obviously, the Night King is. We don't even know how old is he? Thousands of years old? Mm-hmm. It was basically the Night King was
an original
one of the first men, right? So he's mm-hmm. been around for thousands of years. Multiple three-eyed ravens. The only thing they haven't really used against the Night King in the past has been a dragon. Dragonfire. Bran said we don't know if that would work or not. Maybe, maybe mm-hmm. not. But
does Bran really know, though? Like, I'm like, Bran probably knows if that's going to work or not.
Well, the most frustrating thing about seeing them strategize this war is you have Bran sitting here who's like, who can warg, who can see into the future, who's been touched by the Night King, who just kind of, like, says a thing or two, and then everyone goes, oh, yeah?
Okay. Yeah.
All right, so what else should we do? Yeah. And no one like wants to like back it up. Like, Brent, why don't you tell us?
Huh? They did his plan.
Right. They're doing his plan.
In the trap.
This season is connected to the Night King.
He's been touched by him.
This season is also so accelerated that we've moved past the fact that they've all accepted that Bran is the Three-Eyed Raven. There were no on-camera conversations about that aside from with Sam. And so we've just jumped into this fact. Now we're jumping into Bran's plan. Yeah, I agree with you, Ryan, like, that there's just...
Like, he says these...
I wish that there was more connection. And I know, Kristen, he's one of your favorite characters.
No, I never said that. I'm the only person who's excited for like how his story will unravel.
I'm excited, yeah.
But
I'm
he's not my favorite. Let's ex-nay that. But I want to say, that Tyrion has questioned him. He goes over it during this episode and is sort of like, hey, tell me your story. We've got time. Because I feel wants... to help. He wants to sort of plan and see if he can get a hand in there, if you will.
So that's a big black box of knowledge now. We don't know what Tyrion knows that might help, maybe who he's also told it to. So much. Remember, Bran's power. Bran is not all knowing. He is not. Mm-hmm. He is all seeing. He can transport himself to the right place. So has he been doing more trips to figure out? We don't know. A lot of this has been happening off scene. We've seen some of his trips, but we've learned he does not know everything from the fact that Sam had to tell him where to go to see the wedding of Targaryen to start.
Yeah.
So it's going to be really interesting. He can time travel. He just doesn't know exactly where he's going.
Yeah. Well, and he doesn't know
when things happen.
You don't know what you don't know.
Exactly. Kind of
Exactly. So it'll be interesting what knowledge was imparted and if it's going to play any role, because we don't know those extra things he knows, and we should stop fooling ourselves again, you know, about we think we've seen everything the characters have seen. There's a lot that we still have not been educated about that's going to be sprung on us somehow credibly. But your point about Bran, that it's interesting the way he gains credibility with people person by person when he says the cryptic line. He had the credibility with Jamie. He had the credibility with Littlefinger a minute before he died, you know, with the chaos is a ladder comment. But I haven't seen him. Has he gained credibility with Daenerys? Has he regained credibility in that way of being the Three-Eyed Raven with Jon in any way? We don't know this. Has he given Jon such a crazy line that he would go, oh yeah, you must have been seeing
all
this?
Well, they're following his plan. So Jon is the leader of it, saying, you know, when Bran says they're going to come for me, Jon's like, okay, this is where you're going to be, and we're going to stay close to Bran. So clearly, they're all on board.
When the Children of the Wild two, three seasons ago, wasn't that tree protected by some kind of thing? The Whites don't have any power and they couldn't go towards it.
But once he was marked, then they could enter it.
Yeah, because Bran and the Night King are connected now.
Mm-hmm.
Got it. So the tree won't protect him then. Okay.
It might be exactly what the Night King wants them to do. You know, we've seen the Night King hold off in the episode of Beyond the Wall. We saw him hold off and sit there and wait patiently for the dragon to show up because he kind of knew it was going to, right? Mm-hmm. In order for them to get past the wall, they needed the dragon in the first place. Mm-hmm. I remember when we were watching seasons ago, it kind of got on my nerves how many times they would say, Jon Snow would come down and say, oh, the army of the dead, they're coming, the Night King's coming, the wild, they're coming, winter is coming. It's like, well, then where are they? And why aren't they here? Like, for season after season, and then they wouldn't. And then finally, we realized that, oh, the Night King was waiting for this destiny-driven moment where the dragon comes and he can claim that and break down the wall and then move past. So it's everything that Bran and the Night King are doing. It seemed very deliberate. Everything that Bran says and doesn't say, it's almost like his silence allows for the timeline to play out the way it's supposed to.
Can the Night King see what Bran travels to?
We don't know what the Night King can and can't see, but there's evidence to show that the Night King can warg, and there's evidence to say that the Night King was originally a Stark, and that the Night King is also a Greensteer.
I think the Night King is actually a Targaryen because of that artwork that he did last week. It's basically the Targaryen sigil of dragons, but with limbs. And he's riding Viserion right now, the dragon. So I feel like he'd have to have Targaryen blood.
The symbol with limbs is also seen on the dragon glass wall.
And mm-hmm. in the very first episode.
Oh, we've seen it many times.
The very first scene in the first episode.
Well, just since we're talking about it, a lot of people are talking about these symbols right now. And it is, there are in that swirl, there are seven arms to it. The Targaryen sigil has essentially seven
the seven-pointed star. Mm-hmm.
The seven-pointed star that's a part of his eye. And, of course, the faith of the seven. I mean, we're seeing seven coming into play. Is it all going to... Seven tied kingdoms, together. Yeah.
Mm. I'm excited for the fact that we might get some of the original man's story and who this guy was through Bran's green sight. We've seen it before. We got to see, Lyanna and Rhaegar. We got to see that through Bran. So I'm hoping that we really get to learn more about him, our enemy at this point, because I don't think that I don't exactly know what he wants. I don't know if it's about restoring the balance because the Children of the Forest created, you know, the White Walkers. They had to create the Three-Eyed Raven Tree. I don't know if Bran is connected with the Night King. There's a lot of speculation that he's gone back in time and has tried to prevent this from happening. Like when he told the Mad King, burn them all, they think that might have been Bran, and the Mad King just accidentally burnt his people instead of burning all the whites.
Kind of like he got stuck into his head a little bit, kind of like he did with Hodor and Hold the Door, burn them all, Hold the Door, burn them all. One more thing.
Yeah. I wasn't done.
Okay,
and
go.
Also, Bran going back in time, possibly manipulating time by being Bran the Builder, actually being Bran the Builder who built that wall to try to help, you know, maybe he saw this coming, so he had gone back in time and built this wall.
Maybe, I don't know.
Also, again, Ryan hates this, but also, again, the fact that maybe last time he went back, he tried to be in the original man, and that's when they got connected because he tried to warg into the original man and tried to stop this from ever happening. But he probably should have warged into the Children of the Forest. But I think that possibly in the end, the only way to kill the Night King will be Bran dying since they're connected and, you know, killing that tree that the Three-Eyed Raven was, you know, rooted in.
It's almost like one of those hypotheticals, like if you could go back in time and kill baby Hitler, you know, like, would you? And it's like, you know, you'd never know how history will play out if your actions will lead to a worse outcome. You know, hindsight's 20/20, but not really, is it? Because you don't know how things will play out from that position that you change things.
Is greensight 2020?
Yeah. I don't know. Colorful, at least.
I want to get into news and gossip with Anna Kay.
Guys, speaking of our Night King friend, I've got some news for you. So the actor that plays the Night King, Vladimir Furtick, he actually gave a rare interview where he talked about his character. We haven't really seen this from him. Mm. And so I want to be clear about this. So he wasn't the original Night King, but he's the Night King now. He's been playing the Night King for season 6 through our current season 8. And he was saying that, you know, somebody made the Night King. He didn't know who he was, but we don't know who the Night King was before. Was he a soldier? Was he from nobility? Who was he? And that he has this chip on his shoulder. He wants revenge. He's seeking, you know, everyone in this show, he says, has two sides, a good side and a bad side. And he's the only one that has a pure bad side. When they were talking about what to expect in the final season, he said people will see that he has a target he wants to kill. Is that Bran? Is that Danny? Is that Jon? We can talk about it. There's also a moment in Hard Home where Jon was on the boat and the Night King looked at him and raised his arm. He says there's a similar, even stronger moment between Jon and the Night King this season. So that is still to come. So I'm really excited about that. And then they asked him, do you have an all-time favorite Night King moment? And he said, it's still coming. So it's going to be a lot there. I also, just a fun fact, so the Night King doesn't blink often, if you've ever noticed that. And the actor, Vladimir Furtick, actually said that he was directed to not blink. And in these harsh conditions, it was actually really difficult for him.
Oh, wow.
And that depending on which director was there, he got different notes, whether it was to have some humanity behind the eyes or just be completely frozen. And he was like, yeah, it was really difficult to do all these scenes and not blink and be this Night King. So.
That's really interesting.
There you go.
Something small like blinking is such a human thing, and when you take that away, it removes the humanity from someone, a thing, a creature, a person, whatever he is. Those are very... thanks for the news. That's really cool. I love the interview. I feel like he didn't give all that away on accident.
Yeah,
I feel like we're going to see a lot of that play out if we're talking... Yep. We're talking predictions now, Kristen.
We are rolling into predictions. Let's go. What you got, Ryan?
I got a couple things for you.
Yes.
So I think that I mean, it's already been said the target is Bran. The Night King's target is Bran. I think that the big moment where he's going to raise the dead happens in the crypts. I think we'll be having a lot of dead.
We have to talk about what was edited out of the HBO show. So this is part of it. I said I thought that the Winterfell crypts was going to be reanimated by the Night King, and so we were going to see people like possibly Catelyn Stark, possibly Rob,
Lyanna.
Ned can't really be reanimated because he's
doesn't
been,
have a head. He was in King's Landing. We don't even know. He probably didn't get
all the bones are back in the crypt, but they're all chopped up. But yes.
But yeah, so that part was edited out. And then a part that Ryan said about the Night King and Bran was actually edited out.
I was talking about how the Night King and Bran, I think, are going to be
like in a psychological,
like some kind of psychic battle.
Psychological
battle. They're going to battle each other, but not in the physical world.
Yes.
They're going to have some kind of psychic battle. That whole section that we talked about was edited out. Yeah. And so
We don't know. It could have been a technical difficulty, but
HBO was there auditing and they're making sure everything was going smoothly. And those are the parts that they yanked from the live stream.
Yep.
So who knows, guys? Prediction maybe Bran and the Night King are going to have a psychic battle. Another prediction of mine, speaking of black box of information, Jorah told Dany something, some suggestion, and I think that's going to...
It could have been this ghost talk to Sansa, but it might have not.
Exactly.
We don't know.
It might have been something else.
How about I want to ask you guys something. Yeah. How about Bronn being sent to kill Jaime and Tyrion? Do we think
about
this is going to
happen?
Last
week. I just don't see it. And a lot of fans actually kind of agree. Like, I don't think the motivation's there. The castle and the gold, like, I know he wants his castle. Mm-hmm. I just don't think that's enough for him to go. And Jaime's kind of a different person to him, so maybe. But Tyrion, like, he's just not going to do that.
Yeah.
I think maybe there's going to be another power play there where he turns it around or pretends like he did or something.
Also, was that Cersei or Qyburn that gave that order? Because we saw Qyburn tell Bronn that was Cersei's order, but we didn't see her give the order, so I'm not sure. Yeah. Also, Tyrion in early episodes has said to Bronn, this one I'm sure of, guys, it's not about Targaryen burning, but he said to Bronn, hey, if anyone ever asks you to kill me, I'll double it. I'll always pay more than anybody else is paying for whatever they tell you to do against me. So I don't think he's going to...
Yeah, I have a strong stance that Bronn would never kill Tyrion and that Cersei would never kill Jaime. I just cannot see a world where that happens. Amidst all of this craziness happening, I just don't see those two things happening, period.
I don't see there being a 100% happy ending at all.
No.
By the end of this, I think it's going to be somewhat of a bittersweet reckoning. I think that there will be a mainly... everything destroyed, but the hope for rebirth, the coming of a new summer, and I don't think the...
Okay, I'm interrupting you.
Okay,
I do think the Night King will be slayed. I do. I think he's going to be slayed by the Kingslayer. Not next episode, but I think he will be slayed by the Kingslayer, Jaime, who had slayed Aerys Targaryen, a Fire King. I think he will slay an Ice King.
That's an interesting prediction.
But I think that maybe Bran will warg into Jaime to get close to the Night King to do this. I mean, we've got to see something else with them.
Yeah.
He said his old friend when he was waiting for him. So I feel like there's something not done yet between Bran using Jaime and that coming and us feeling good about their relationship and that apology.
Yeah. I think with there's one of the previews where we see the symbols of basically five main characters left at Winterfell in the snow. So we see Tyrion's hand of the pin, queen pin. We see a ring. We see Jaime's sword. There's lots of clues left at an empty Winterfell. So I do think the next, in the immediate next episode, not just talking about the entire season 8, but in the immediate next episode in this battle, I definitely think this is going to be the battle, episode 3. And I think we're going to see a lot of our beloved characters die, but I do think there's going to be some sort of retreat with a lot of our main characters to I don't know where, but there's going to be a retreat, and we're going to see the casualty and the chaos left over at Winterfell.
Yeah, I wanted to jump on that retreat point. I actually think this battle will be big. We've heard about it took 55 days at night to film. It's going to be big. There's going to be a lot of loss, but I don't think it'll be decisive in any way. I actually think they've given us the clue of the fact that we see the dominance dominoes in the lead-in turning blue that they want us from episode to episode to track the progress of people going. And that maybe there's a pursuit, maybe there's a parallel path that survivors try to do to still be a part of the victory of the living. So I'm not predicting really decisive defeat, but some
who's,
sort of
who's going to die next episode? Go.
Theon protecting Bran. Okay. Absolutely.
Great.
I think Grey Worm. That's the easy one.
Yeah. That's what I was going to say.
He's the easiest red shirt.
Grey Worm. Grey Worm is worm Tormund. Food.
Tormund.
Pod. I think we're going to lose some of our other characters. Gendry might die. Like, there's going to be some ancillary characters.
The little girl who reminded
of Shireen.
Little Shireen, too.
I do think they might go after the kids. I think kids are a special focus. I had another prediction.
Please.
That there's a line from the actual trailer for the season, the marketing materials, where Bran says, "Everything you did brought you to where you are now, where you belong, home." A lot of people thought that was going to be a line delivered to Jon, maybe in the first episode or something like that. It hasn't been, and it wouldn't make sense to deliver it to him now. So Bran is going to be in the Godswood, guarded by Theon, and I think there's only two people it makes sense he's going to deliver this line to. Either Theon, because he has his trials and tribulations and betrayals, or the Night King.
Yeah, I was
going
to say the Night King.
Which would blow some minds, and that would be maybe a part of his old humanity, maybe a part of him actually being a Stark or something like that, but I do think it's delivered to one of those two characters.
Can I ask you guys a quick question?
Please.
Do you think there is a world that exists in which the Night King has redemption, and the Night King can come back from being the Night King and who he is now?
I would love that. I mean, I think we talked about that in one of our last shows. Like, I'd love for the spell to be undone. And they were talking about how there's a harp in Lyanna's. It was Rhaegar's harp, and it's in Lyanna's crypt. And that maybe this harp could be played to undo a spell. So I don't know if that harp is there. I don't know if that's possible. But I would absolutely love if he'd be 1,000 years old if we got to see the Night King, like, sort of undone. But
Woody, I don't know.
So
magic.
There were people conjecturing that the Army of the Dead and the Night King, they're kind of a force of nature. They are not evil, and they might actually be good and have a productive role to play in some sort of grander conflict. I think with
population control.
Yeah, exactly.
Climate control.
The Ned.
The fact that we've ruined the climate.
Yeah, the Ned Umber scene and some other things, and even the quotes you were reading earlier, it doesn't seem that they're just the misunderstood good guys that we have to get to know better. Yeah. So I don't think we're going to learn anything about them. Or maybe he's fooling us and there is some subtlety to it.
I can't imagine that George R. R. Martin has just put together this zombie army and we're not going to learn about them and it's not going to be for the greater good. I think it's already has been for the greater good, seeing all these houses stop fighting for the throne. Every season it's been about who's going to rule, and now it's finally about uniting the Seven Kingdoms for real. So,
kind of.
I don't know. Have we seen any of the other houses come north?
Yeah, no. Sansa and Dany are not down for the cause. Like, they're down for the cause, but not.
I don't know about this whole greater good thing. Honestly, no, and this is the thing about Game of Thrones, is that it kind of opened up our eyes to a greater beauty of storytelling, where sometimes you can relate to the fact that there are real consequences to actions. They're not always black and white, and they're not always a happy ending. But I think that ultimately, the cruel indifference of death is a reality that we all have to accept. And there is no greater good when it comes to survival. So will humanity survive and thrive and move forward? The only way to do that is to defeat the Night King and the Army of the Dead. That's
well, it. I think they will. Or else Westeros is like pre-Ice Age and we all have to go to Essos, the remaining people.
I agree with you. I think they will, but I don't think that will happen in episode 3. We're going to be in the battle. Yeah. There's going to be some sort of I don't know. I just
some
don't
kind of
there's not going to be a clean cut.
A few people
it's
left.
Too soon.
Or they could fit everyone on the beautiful beaches of the Island of Noth.
Stephen, what prediction do you have? Stephen Lemieux, our engineer in the booth.
For next episode, my prediction is that there's going to be a situation where Dany can save Jon, and she hesitates. Jon possibly commands the dragon on his own to save himself.
I would like that.
But we have to drive some kind of... We need something on his end now, because she's obviously got a little bit of conflict with him. We need to drive something on his end now against her to actually create that conflict and build it up.
I think that's really good. Mm-hmm. Jon being the over-honest person. He decided to break that to her at exactly the wrong moment. Like, yeah. I need Classic your dragons John. And I need your 30,000 men. By the way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, real quick, just...
Will there be a Night Queen?
Remind me, where's Varys? Real quick, where is
he? In the crypts.
Varys.
Yeah, we saw it in the preview for episode 3.
Or he will be in the crypts.
He was in the crypts.
So he is there in Winterfell. Okay. Yes.
We saw him arrive, and then he's.
I didn't see him.
He delivered the line about the point of the older people is to remind the younger people that nothing lasts forever.
Guys, we got to end. This panel can't last forever.
I know.
I wish it could.
But I think there might be a Night Queen coming. I think the Night King will have his queen.
Your eyes are blue.
Is it Kristen? Always been blue. Could be Cersei, could be Daenerys, who knows? But I'm Kristen Elizabeth Snyder. You can follow me at Cinematic Escape. Thanks for joining us. Can't wait for next week. Jeremy Dan.
I'm Jeremy Dan. Please don't follow me, but I'll be here next week as well.
Follow him north.
Yes. Hi, guys. I'm Anna K. Thomas. Thank you again for being with us in the watch-along and the live chat. We'll be back next week.
I'm Ryan Mulotti. You can find me at Ryan Mulotti. Guys, next week we're doing the Watch Along Live. Then after that,
it's war!
Right here at 8 p.m. Valar Morghulis.
Valar Dohaeris. Until next week.
Our founder, Kevin Undergaro, and me, Maria Menounos, would like to thank you for tuning in to AfterBuzz TV. Remember, we're not just the first, we're the biggest in the world, and we're the only destination for all your favorite TV shows. Whatever you crave, we've got it. So go to AfterBuzzTV.com and check out our lineup. Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.